The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. They have a wide range of degrees at many levels. Whether you want to become a pastor, missionary, or seminary professor, Southeastern can provide you with the high-quality education and training that you need. Southeastern even provides a number of distance education options for those who are interested but cannot relocate. To learn more, visit sebts.edu/5LQ. That's sebts.edu/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast. Hey, welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
That was a little thin, Todd.
That was a little thin. Let me take a drink.
You're going to drink into the microphone?
Yeah.
Here we go.
What?
With enthusiasm. Well done.
It's more clear.
Today, we have the pleasure of talking to Steve Graves, who we know through having worked with him as a coach and consultant with Lifeway. He works He works with our executive leadership team on big directional stuff for Lifeway.
He's worked with us a long time ago.
Yep, worked with our team a little bit, especially when we were getting Ministry Grid off the ground and kind of looking at some new branding direction and things like that. And that is what Steve does. He has a background across a whole bunch of different businesses, having been in different managerial and leadership positions. But currently, he runs his own business as an advisor and consultant and an executive coach. So he works with high-level executives, but then also focuses on younger entrepreneurial leaders. So he, at any given time, he's working with, you know, like Fortune 500 companies, some younger startup type of entrepreneurial leaders, but then also some nonprofits, not-for-profits. And so he makes it a point to work with all those. Steve describes his passions as sort of a mingling of business and theology. So that's where he's coming at these things from. It's not just business strategy, but also a theological and a biblical mindset as well. He is married to Karen. They have three adult children. They live in Northwest Arkansas, which is the home of
Arkansas.
That's right. It's the home of Walmart. It's the home of
Tyson Chicken.
Tyson Foods. That's right. But chicken being their biggest export, as well as a whole bunch of other businesses, because Walmart has a gravitational pull. Let's put it this way. So international companies. So he lives in a place that was, you know, sort of a rural small town originally, and now is a business hub. And we talk a little bit about that. He has written 12 plus books, including a short series that you can find on his website now, that are all about different areas of focus and leadership. But if you go to Stephen R. Graves, that's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, not with a V, but
like
a P-H. Stephen. rgraves.com. You can find his blog where he's posting weekly. You can find his books. You can find out more information about coaching. So be sure to go there. Todd, anything you would like to add about Mr. Graves?
He's a lot of fun.
He is.
I hope we have a lot of fun.
The conversation is probably a tad more lively than maybe some other guests. No offense to other guests.
None.
But it helps when somebody has a great sense of humor and a humorous background.
I have some of my most memorable conversations have been with Steve and some of our other leaders and guests.
And those are tales for another day on another podcast where the audio will be lost forever. So without further ado, we bring you our conversation with Steve Graves. You will definitely enjoy it, and I'm sure that it will be at least a little bit insightful on his side. We may say some smart stuff, too. We'll see.
Occasionally.
All right. Enjoy the podcast.
A blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then.
That's right. And yes, and we are definitely
blind. We are talking Northwest Arkansas, so.
And they know all about blind squirrels in Northwest Arkansas. All right, folks. Enjoy the podcast. Here's Steve Graves. We are here today with Steve Graves. As you heard in the introduction, Steve is an advisor, consultant, and a coach for both executives and entrepreneurs. He's the author of several books, and we're very excited to talk with him today, in part because we've had a chance to work with Steve ourselves as a team and then here at Lifeway. And so I've gotten a chance to know him a little bit, to benefit from his observations and expertise.
Well, and know people that he knows well, like Lominick, who's a frequent co-host on the podcast as well. He and Steve go way back, and
We do.
At some point, we may want to hear stories.
Yeah. So if you have any dirt on Brad Lominick or any of our executive leadership team,
our executive leadership team, that would be great.
So, Steve, officially, welcome to the podcast. We are excited to talk with you today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
So since we've teed you up to share other people's dirty laundry, you can start with that or you can share something more interesting about yourself. Just if you could just give the listeners an introduction of who you are, how you got to where you are, business-wise, leadership-wise, a little bit about your family, where you live, just to give a little bit of context and personal touch on the podcast.
Well, I'll resist the temptation to go dirty laundry. I would love to do that, and it would spike your listeners. I promise you. We could start with Lominick and then just go around the country. On me personally, I live in Northwest Arkansas, Fayetteville specifically. Been here for actually 2 or 3 decades now, and love living here. It's just a wonderful place to live, because we have all of the economic energy surrounding Walmart and all the vendor teams and Tyson Food and all that. It's a great outdoors area, and I love to be outdoors, love to fish, kayak, bike, et cetera. And then we also have the university here. And so there's a little bit of a funky education thing that kind of sits in the middle of all of that economic engine. So it's a great place to live. I'm married, have 3 adult children. My primary business, like you mentioned, is I basically spend time with a handful of CEOs across all industries, all sizes, every year. And so that's kind of my gig, man.
Well, that's great. So you mentioned having the university and Walmart, Tyson, et cetera, all right there. So does that mean you have like a collection of college students who are sort of anti-capitalism in the middle of like this capitalist hub? And so it's just a constant odd friction?
It is. There's actually in Fayetteville, there's a subtitle that says Keep Fayetteville Funky. And below that, you know, all the businesses actually build up north near Bentonville and Rogers way more than Fayetteville, because Fayetteville is such a hard place to build and et cetera. But yeah, there's always that tension between that notion of capitalism versus, you know, let's just, you know, that's a dirty, horrible kind of thing.
So Fayetteville shops local and Bentonville shops Walmart.
Yeah, you got it. You got
there
it.
You go.
And worldwide.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into our first question. So who are you currently learning from right now?
You know, good question. Love that question, actually. The last year, probably there's a couple of baseline things that I always try to do, and been doing them for probably longer than you guys have actually been alive, because I'm such an old geezer here. But like, for example, I always try to keep a theology book, a business book, and a fiction book with me at all times. That's just kind of what I do. And I get those book titles from, basically friends, peers, some of my clients. You know, as I mentioned, I work with, you know, a handful of CEOs at a time, and I sit on a number of boards around the country. And so I'm not kind of always asking people who they're learning from. So I'm building my list always. I just got through reading, I just finished the book, The Originals, that's my business book. Just finished rereading a bunch of Brennan Manning stuff. That's kind of my theology stuff for the last month or so. You know, and then I just always have a fiction that I keep in hand.
You're not going to tell us what that is? Is that a guilty pleasure?
You big Amish
romance fan?
Yeah, that's me. You nailed it. How did you pick that out? It's stirred in with a sci-fi twist always.
That's right. It's maybe some vampire.
Alien Amish.
Yeah. Exactly. My fiction is just mindless, simple, the simplest kind of, you know, CIA trash crap, just that kind of stuff.
I mean, you're a big fan of Jack Reacher then.
You know what? I am a Jack Reacher. I'm a David Baldacci.
I call those airplane books, because you can read about 75% of one in one airplane ride.
I do. That is my answer. Because see, on the return trip of every one of my client engagements, I'm empty, man. I've got no more real strategic brain. So I pull out my fiction book and I will read it from the time we lift off to the time I land back in Fayetteville. And it's hilarious. It's like, and I might even reread something I read 10 years ago or something. So that's pretty fun. A couple. And by the way, I'm actually I like to read, but my primary learning style is actually watching and listening. So I'm always asking people what they're reading, what they're listening, what they're watching, and what they're doing. It's from a learning standpoint. That's kind of my learning angles that I'll go after, because it's amazing how many leaders, they know they're supposed to be readers, but they're just not. So here's what I do. They're one of my CEOs. I always find their learning style, and I'll always make sure that I say to them, I'll say, listen, here's what I need you to understand from me. Okay. I'm a little bit of an educated man, got a master's, got a doctorate, that whole thing. So I'm going to give you the liberation to not be a reader. And so all these half-read, one-chapter books that you've read, they're stacking up all over your house and your office, but you haven't read them. Why don't you just go give those to somebody who's a reader? And why don't you find the vehicle? You know, if you're a watcher, then get on the TED Talks or get on some, you know, get on whatever. If you're a listener, same thing, get on audiobooks. And so I am a reader, but I'm a reader by more by discipline than I am just sheer enjoyment. Couple things that I've begun reading in the last year is there's a couple of buddies that I have, a guy named Kyle Westaway and a guy named Max Anderson. Each of them put together a weekend reader or a weekend review of stuff. And I really look forward to those. Both of them come out on the weekend. One comes out on Saturday, and I think one comes out on Sunday. And I met them through another board that I'm on. I'm on a board called Praxis. And so Kyle Westaway is one of the leading kind of a nonprofit attorney, Harvard guy, teaches at Harvard a little bit. Max Anderson is also, I think he's a Harvard fellow. But both of these guys are very, very smart. They scour reading stuff all the time. And so this is kind of the best. It'd be like if you're getting somebody who's going to scour a bunch of magazines and books every week and tell you what you ought to be reading. So I read both those guys, and it's very enjoyable.
So the stuff they put together, is it books? Is it stuff they've collected from around the internet? Is it both? Just sort of their suggested readings for the week? What are they feeding you?
Yeah, is it like an executive summary of those things, or is it just, hey, here's a one paragraph synopsis on, you know, 15 different things you should be paying attention to?
Yeah, great. A little bit of both. Both of them will have a point of view, and they'll bring a little bit of a summary of whatever it is they've been thinking about that week, but they'll both bring in highlights of things that they learned this last week and actually link to the actual article. So what you have in your inbox is you'll have the paragraph itself, but you'll also have then a link to the actual article in the New Yorker or whatever, The Economist or whatever. It's fascinating read. You know, I've really enjoyed both of them are just outstanding writers. Really, really good thinkers. And so they're picking out stuff that's pretty eclectic. It's not just, you know, the latest 15 tips to being the greatest leader that's walked the earth. You know, it's not that stuff. It's like last week, there was one on loneliness. And so this one of the entire reader was on loneliness, all this data points, statistics, articles, why important people are lonely, why busy people are lonely, why loneliness is trending in our culture, what does that mean in our culture? Just, you know, very eclectic stuff. So that's some of the people I'm learning from. And then I have a group of friends, obviously. I'm a highly relational guy. And so a lot of my learning is actually in one-on-one venues or one-on small group venues. And so I'm always learning. Like I have a meeting today with a local CEO who is just an incredible leader. I mean, he's like unbelievable. And he and I will grab lunch, and during our lunch somewhere along the way, I'm sure I'll pull out my phone and I'll tap in a few things that I'm learning from him on the spot.
Well, that's great. And of course, you did leave out your book club currently going through the latest Amish vampire fiction. I'm sure you learn a lot from them
true.
As well. You can glean a lot.
That's always a good escape.
Yeah, you can glean a lot from a good book club. So can't forget them.
Totally agree.
Second question is, what's the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either for the team? So I know you have a team that you work with, that you oversee. You also work with other businesses and their teams, or for yourself as a leader. So current point of emphasis, team oriented or personal leadership oriented?
Yeah. You know, probably guys, the last 4 or 5 years, I've lifted up, I've elevated the whole idea of making sure that I'm actually leading and managing myself. to some degree at the same kind of intentionality and the same kind of enterprise focus that I'm leading and managing you. In the world we live in, it's just really, really easy for me to become expert at managing and leading you, and me really fall behind the curve in me growing and leading, developing, managing myself. And so in the last few years, I've tried to really elevate that and keep that a priority in my own, kind of in my own leadership palette or my own leadership recipe, if possible. And I try to emphasize that with other people as well. It's not always easy, you know, what that does is it kind of keeps me real. It keeps me a little raw, keeps me a little unsettled. I don't get just to sit down in my seat, you know, and I'm just kind of the guy that knows everything and been everywhere and done everything. I'm a little bit, you know, got a little edginess to me because I'm still trying to figure out how to really be, you know, genuine and authentic at all times. And, so that's one. That's one idea and one thing that's important to me right now. Make sense?
So Steve, let me ask a quick question. So I tweeted through, read your book Flourishing, last spring, I think it was, and it seemed to me what you just talked about is kind of the crux of that book. You know, I remember never allow your context to become an excuse for not flourishing. Is that?
Yeah.
Speak a
yeah.
little bit to that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, the flourishing theme is basically making sure that I've adopted a, you know, kind of the right mindset and the right issues. So for example, just had a chat with a really good friend over the weekend. We took a long bike ride and we were talking about some of the issues that he is struggling in his very large company that he's working in. And he just said, you know, he said, man, I've got to get a better handle on perspective. And I've got to learn how to discipline myself for a longer view of life. And he said, you know, if I can do that, it will help me handle the moments that I find myself just really pressured through. So that's just an example. That's a small example of what can help me with flourishing. But the bigger thing that you, you know, Todd, that you referenced is that's a mindset or an instrument or a tool that I'm self-applying. I'm not just telling you to do that. I'm making sure that I do that, you know, because to the degree, it's just so much easier for me to be a supplier or a carrier or a transporter of information and insights and truth and leadership tips and all that stuff than it is for me to actually engage it and do it myself. And so, you know, if my goal is to actually make sure I'm managing me, not just managing you, then I will find myself answering, you know, asking questions and answering questions around flourishing, you know, listening, delegation, you know, temperance, character, all those kind of things. And I mean, I'm the last thing from being the poster child of what everybody's supposed to go model life against. I promise you. You know, that is not me. But I do know this. I know that as a general rule, rarely a week goes by that I don't try to recalibrate and ask myself, how am I doing on all of these things I'm basically yapping out to other people?
So let me ask this question. A lot of people think that, you know, in order to be a coach, you need to be better at everything than the person that you're coaching. So how does that work? I mean, yeah, you know, hey, we've hung out enough to know, you know,
Were you about to say he's not better? Is that where you were going with that, Todd?
No.
He was about to say, I know you're not that smart. I know you're not that looking.
That was a very pregnant pause, Todd.
Just answer the question.
Yeah, I got you. No, actually, Todd, that's really a really good, insightful question. I mean, look, take knowledge, for example, all right? Every client I have, and I work across all industries, I always have kind of one or two giant global Fortune 1000, 500, 100, or smaller. I mean, smaller number, but way bigger company CEOs in my portfolio, or family-held businesses or private. And I always have a handful of gunslinging entrepreneurs that are just like, you know, about to make their next million or about to fall off the cliff again or something like that. Okay, well, here's the thing. You know, Take knowledge. I can't read enough. Let's just suppose I went to work for one of the top poultry companies in the world, and I worked with that CEO as an example. I can't read enough about chicken to know more about that industry.
Well, the Amish, I'm telling you. Well, some of your reading is really helping out.
There's some allusions to free range chicken in there.
That's why I didn't give you the books I'm reading. I'll tell you who I'm working with. Free range chicken, global
GMO
warming.
GMO free. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, there's a knowledge. There's always going to be a shortage of knowledge. You know, what people need, the difference in useful strategy and strategy is generally this. Useful strategy basically has trust. It has context and it has some kind of subject matter expertise. That doesn't mean I've got to be the smartest person in the world, but I at least need to know what it is we're talking about. And I need to have at least traveled this road a little bit, you know. And my style of coaching is, I'm not at all suggesting that my style is the only style, but when you build trust with somebody and you actually understand their context and you can apply all of this giant, you know, backlog and backstory of experience and learning into their context, and then you happen to know some about their subject matter, it can certainly help you. So the notion that a coach is the perfect coach, or, you know, that's just crazy. I mean, how many NFL coaches or even college coaches can go out there and throw a ball or run around or block somebody or, you know, pound through the tackles and score a touchdown like the runners? They can't do that anymore. But guess what? They have the subject matter expertise. They have some trust and they certainly understand the context of how to apply that to this particular wide receiver or whatever. And so that's really, Todd, that's a really good, insightful question. Our leaders don't have to be perfect. You know, we just have to trust them. You know, and here's the deal. If you're trying to lead me in an area and you have no subject matter expertise, I'll role play with you a while. But guess what? You really won't lead me in that area. You know, I'll go, you might lead me in something else. But I'll go around you to get that. I'll work around you to get some leadership or help from somebody else. Happens all the time.
Well, let me ask you our next question. What obstacles are you currently facing in your life or business?
Yeah. I'll approach a question like that probably with kind of three layers. One layer is me personally. One is the businesses that I actually own. I own a handful of businesses or co-own a handful of businesses. Like I'm a half owner in a sports talk business. I own, you know, some artist design firms. I'm a part owner in a bunch of stuff. Or the clients that I work with, because I'm always kind of in the venue of looking at their organizations. You know, some things that I'm wrestling with that kind of would go across all three of those a little bit is, you know, I'm reminded again of the value of getting kind of the Jim Collins, getting the right people, on the bus, standing on the bus, maybe not sitting on the bus in the right seat yet, but at least they're on the bus standing, you know, they got their backpack and at least they're traveling with us. You know, they're not on the side of the road or they're not on somebody else's bus traveling their journey. They're with us on our team. And because talent is, there's just such a competition for great talent in today's world. And it's amazing how hard it is to actually find talent that really works inside your organization during your organization's life cycle, like right now. You know, the issue of who's the best leader, it's not the best leader on paper. It's the best leader who fits my organizational needs this particular season. That's the issue. And so that's the reason a lot of this historical competence, you know, somebody has this resume that goes through the roof. Problem is, I just don't need that resume during this next season of my organizational life or whatever. So getting the right people kind of on the bus is actually something that I'm kind of rethinking a little bit and reworking that one a little bit. The issue of speed and pace is always going to be that seems to be something that reoccurs for me. We just live in such a fast world, and information can be gained fast. Somebody can rocket to the top and then just fall off the cliff or whatever. You know, we can have had sterling success. You know, all of our metrics and our wildly important outcomes are unbelievable for something we did 3 months ago, and we think we're going to transfer that into something we do 3 months later, and all of a sudden it just doesn't work. I mean, it's like we just literally, lit the fire and it just flamed out. Nothing happened. And so the whole deal of speed and pace and context is those things I'm working with right now in my head, trying to kind of relearn some stuff there.
When you say thinking through that and relearning it, is it a matter of perspective? Is it a matter of skill set? What is it that you're focusing on in terms of getting your head around that more effectively?
Yeah, great. So I'm going to usually probably start with kind of a little bit of an insight learning, just to see if there's anything I need to rethink, or I need to reconstruct or deconstruct in my thinking about something. So, for example, in the last year, if I've had one conversation around the topic that leading is not facilitating, I've had it dozens and dozens of times, because we live in a world right now that, that an empowered leader, nobody wants to work for this domineering, barbarian, crazy person above us. But at the same time, and so we want somebody above us that's very empathetic, they're very collaborative, they're very nice, they're very facilitating kind of in their style, and that's fine. But the problem is that at the end of the day, there are occasions in leading that leading is not facilitating. I have to actually inject myself, not in a mean-spirited way, but I have to inject myself into an organizational rhythm, and I have to say, hey folks, you know what? I appreciate the conversation. This has been incredibly interesting, but I think I'm just going to go ahead and say, I think we're going to go left at this next intersection, or as we go into this next furious roundabout, we're going to take the second fly out. We're not just going to keep sprilling around, or we're not just going to do the one that everybody thinks. Because guess what? I'm paid to be the leader, or my role is the leader, and I think that's what we need to do on this one. And by the way, I'll take the full risk. If it doesn't work, pin it on me. Now, that started because, to your question, it started because I kept seeing things, I kept asking things, and I needed to go back and literally, I needed to reconstruct a little bit of what the portfolio of leadership looks like in today's world with millennials as an example. So a lot of these things kind of starts with me making observations, or me, asking questions, or me, kind of looking in the mirror saying, why didn't that work? Why didn't that work better? Or something like that.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and I appreciate you clarifying that a little bit. Let's hit our fourth question, and we're going to move from kind of big vision, business oriented, looking outward, and we're going to move into the home. So you mentioned that you're married, and I think you have three grown children. Is that right?
Yep.
All right. So you're in a place in life where you're not currently raising any children, it doesn't look like. But what does leadership in your home look like?
Well, for me, leadership at home for me has generally been kind of a combination of something I would call baselines. I just wrote a book last year called The Gospel Goes to Work. And in that, I use a framework called the baseline and the blue sky. And the baseline would be something that's just kind of, it's just kind of universal. I need to always be doing it regardless. I can never opt out. I can't ever say, hey, but you don't understand my circumstances, therefore I can opt out of having good character, or I can opt out of really delivering skill or something like that. Okay. The blue sky is where I particularize it for me, my context. Well, the leadership at home thing actually probably would apply to that same framework. So for me, it's just really important that I try to model the life that I really hope that my family would aspire to. And so if I want them to be learners, I need to model learning. If I want them to be a good listener, I need to model being a good listener. And this weekend we had a conversation with one of my adult children, and I didn't do a really good job of listening. And it was so obvious that I needed to apologize. And so after the fact, at a later occasion, I brought it back up and said, listen, can we start this one again and actually do a redo? And you guys just kind of give me a mulligan on this one, and let's just tee it up again and roll. And they did. But I've got to model some stuff. But there's a tremendous amount of contextual things also. Like, my kids are adults. I never had any training on how to parent adult kids. But guess what? You know, you just kind of start doing it and figuring it out and contextualizing that. And, I have to lead my particular home. I have to be a leader inside that particular context with my wife, with my personality and her wiring and my kids and their wiring, not somebody else's wiring that I might be reading some book by. And, for example, let me give you a specific example. You know, every teacher that I've ever met usually likes to talk. Every coach I've ever met likes to talk. Every performer, entertainer, speaker, writer, now not all writers, but it's not uncommon, but usually there's a certain profile of people who like to talk. Well, I fit that profile, man. I'm a teacher, I'm a coach, you know, I'm an advisor, a guide. Well, you know, I've got to model being able to not talk and just listen, ask a question, let it lay there, and not jump on it and over deliver it and all that thing. So those are some of the areas of leadership that I'm working on personally, and I'm trying to figure out. My wife and I are learning how to do the world of empty nest effectively and fun successfully. So doing that, which by the way, the fall in the Ozarks where I live is a spectacular time to live in Northwest Arkansas. All the leaves are changing. You know, it's just air is cool. It's fantastic.
Oh, I'm jealous. It's supposed to be about 90 degrees in Nashville today. We're recording this on Halloween, and my kids are going to be sweating in their polyester costumes. That's ridiculous.
You need to change to the beach venue, buddy. Change immediately. Or just relocate the entire operation over here to Fayetteville. Let's roll. Bring it on over.
Well, I have a follow up question on the teachers and coaches like to talk and learning how to ask a question and let it lie there, because I have a currently 10-year-old and 7-year-old daughters. I tend to probably lecture more than listen, if I'm being honest.
Wow.
Yes.
Yes.
If I'm being honest,
admitting it is the first step.
That's right, and it's about as far as I've gotten.
Hey, we're here for you, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that.
Let's walk you through the problem.
Okay. Well, what are some of? I mean, other than just do a better job, what are some of the practical ways that you have learned, or are learning, how to ask effective questions and then kind of let them do their work without continuing to push and overtalk?
Yeah. Well, every teacher, every coach, and by the way, this is, and put this straight into, can you imagine if a coach, I see it every day. You know, I have a friend who's, you know, coaching basketball or whatever, and they were a great basketball player, and now they're coaching their kids in basketball. Can you imagine what that looks like if you happen to not have a kid who just is like all wired up for basketball? I mean, that's going south. And so
yeah, it's every time I play any sport with my kids.
That's it. So here would be something I would keep in mind for me. What you want to keep in mind is that most of the time you're going to always have things that are in tension. You know, the issue is if there's not a truth that's holding another truth in tension, usually you want to be a little suspicious. Okay? The reason God is so magnificent to us is because all of his truths are held in tension with all of his other truths. We don't get the choice. We don't get to pull out love and let love be this isolated one-dimension expression of who God is. Love has to always be held in tension with all of the other attributes of God. Now, we know that's true. Mm-hmm. So here we go. Let's bring that down to, you know, me and my 10-year-old. I had 10-year-old at the time. Well, guess what I need to do? I need to make sure I hold some things in tension as well. So I have one part of the tension formula would be, I've got all this information and life experience. Come on, Mr. Come on, 10-year-old. Listen from the wise old owl sitting here across the table from you. I mean, come on, man. Just listen to me. I'm trying to save you some headaches and black eyes and self-image problems and all that stuff. And so, granted, I want to be telling them some things, but at the same time, guess the other tension? The other tension is I've got to let them develop and learn on their own. you know, if I shortcut their self-learning, you know, there's no data anywhere that's going to tell me I'll be happy with my kids or they'll be happy with their adult life. They will be less than capable, because guess who was always in the shadows with every answer to every problem? They won't become problem solvers, etc. And so, actually, my adult son, I guess I could tell you this. This won't expose him. But he and I took a bike ride over the weekend, and at the end of the bike ride, we were talking, and he's wrestling with a couple things in his new job, and so we were talking. He said, I was trying to figure out, should I even be asking you and Mom, you know, what do you think about stuff like this? And I said, I don't know. What do you think? And he said, I don't know. Well, what do you think? And we went back and forth a little bit laughing. And I said, well, look, Kyle, I said, here's the deal. We're not solving your problem for you. You're asking us our opinion, and we're giving you our point of view and our advice. But dude, we're not getting involved in your problem one bit. You still have to solve it. And so, you know, if you as a parent, if you can let those tensions, and that's just one example of the tension to be kind of the solution, answer person, teacher, problem solver for your kids, and at the same time, let them tackle it, let them grab it, let them come up with an answer. And so ask them, what would you do here? How would you handle this? What do you think we should do here? If you know what to do, the question is can they figure out what to do? I don't know. Does that help at all? I mean, that is helpful.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. And if I start practicing now, maybe by the time they're adults, I'll be decent at it.
Yeah. Well, I do think that sets up our question really well, because, you know, we'll move from what would you tell Kyle to what would you tell 20-year-old Steve about preparing to lead in life?
Yeah. Wow. Now, there's a tough one. you know, I probably would tell my younger self to be a little bit more vulnerable, to actually, I came from a fiercely independent background. I kind of grew up in a single family where my dad had left us earlier. And so I was kind of the poster child of, you know, if it's gonna be, it's up to me or whatever that thing is, you know, all those little one line things that really are supporting the notion that, you know, it's all bootstrapped by your own sense of determination and will and, and spunk and, you know, all that stuff. And so I would probably tell myself to be a little bit more vulnerable and more transparent early, because that would accelerate my learning, and it probably would build a little bit more, a little bit stronger bonds between me and some people. And then, another one I might do is this, just thought about it when you guys were saying something earlier, I might really try to practice less is more. There's a bunch of books out there. I think I read 3 or 4 in the last 2 or 3 years about less is more, but just the whole idea that less is more, and just basically apply that to all of life, just like everything, just every possible thing I could do. Those might be a couple things I would do, or at least I would aspire that I could somehow grab those and build those in earlier.
So what does vulnerability look like for a 20-year-old aspiring to lead? Is it asking for help? Is it saying, I don't know? Is it relational? What does vulnerability look like there? Because I think that's, I resonate with that. I was not inclined to get help or open up very much about things, 15 years ago. And so I'm curious, what you see as, you know, practices that can be taken to do that.
Yeah. I think it's every single thing you mentioned, John. Every one of them, and maybe even, adding, I'm actually struggling over here on this chair a little bit. You know, my seat. Even though I'm not struggling with everything, and it's not like I'm just a total dumpster fire over here with nothing going on. But because what happens is we over-focus or we over-accentuate those things we're doing well in. But we all know we've all got some baggage, man. We got some stuff we're working on. I mean, we've got some stuff that's really not, it's really less than stellar. And so I might just try to be a little bit more, I'm really not probably as put together as I'm acting like I am, or as I really hope that you believe I am. And I hope that, after I show a little bit of my, my naked ugly self over here, you won't just run out of the room screaming. You'll basically say, you know what? Hey, I'm really glad you kind of finally came to that, because we always knew what your naked ugly self looked like over there, Steve. So, yeah, I think it's every single thing you mentioned plus more. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the clarity and the vulnerability to even say that. It's it's probably easier in retrospect, but it's not always easy to admit some of those things that we need work on. So, Steve, we really appreciate you joining us today. This is where we will wrap.
Absolutely.
That's a little inside joke. Apparently, I've been saying absolutely, and Todd is rubbing off on me.
I say absolutely all the time.
It's a slightly less cliche transition than some of the other ones we can use, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. So we appreciate the time and the insight, and as well as just the time you take investing in Lifeway. Having to deal with guys like Tom Rainer and Brad Wagner, I'm sure is a sacrifice that you make, and we appreciate that. And the time you've spent with our team as well.
Hey, man, thanks so much for inviting me here, and hope this goes well for you guys. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. For listeners, if you go to lifeway.com/leadership, you can find the show notes to this. We will have links to Steve's site where you can find his books, his blog, opportunities for coaching if that's something that your organization may be curious about. We haven't mentioned it on the podcast yet, I don't think. If you go to lifeway.com/pipeline, you can find access to all of the videos from our recent Pipeline conference. You heard it promoted for a long time leading up to it, and you can actually go there and download those. I think it is about $60 for the full day's worth of conference sessions. So that's Eric Geiger, Tom Rainer, Kerry Newhoff, Paul Tripp, Tripp Lee, and our full slate of other speakers. You can get those all there. So again, that's lifeway.com/pipeline. Be sure to check that out. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time. Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.